So today we're going to look at case number 33 from the record of the transmission of the light. One day the master Dao Xin was walking on a road in Heng Mai, and this time is somewhere around the early 7th century of our common era. Coming towards him was a young boy. This boy was unusual in bone structure and in ancestry. It seems that he didn't have a father, or his father left before his birth. And his mother, because of the unusual circumstances of her pregnancy, was thrown out of both her family and her village. In the Confucian patriarchal society of feudal China, this boy, in a sense, did not have a last name, or at least not a legitimate one. And although the boy took his mother's last name, Choi, the villagers, where she begged, called him the boy with no name. Before reading the case, there's one note. In Chinese, the words for surname and nature, Xing, H-S-I-N-G, are similar in form and identical in pronunciation. So in some places in the dialogue, there will be a doubling or tripling of meaning and intent. So while Dao Xin was walking a road, he was taken by the oncoming boy's unusual facial bone structure, and he asked, "What is your surname?" Heng Rin, who is the young boy, said, "I have a surname, but it is not an ordinary one." So both those words, Xing, H-S-I-N-G. Dao Xin said, "What name is that?" And the young boy said, "It is Buddha nature." Dao Xin said, "Then don't you have a surname?" And the boy replied, "I have not, because the nature is empty." Dao Xin acknowledged him in silence, recognizing that he would be a man of Dharma. And later he transmitted to Heng Rin the Dharma and the robe. And this is how Francis Cook translates the tale. Dao Xin asked Heng Rin, "What is your family name?" Heng Rin said, "I have a nature, but it is not an ordinary one." Dao Xin said, "What is its name?" And the young man said, "It is Buddha nature." And Dao Xin said, "Have you no name?" And Heng Rin said, "Because Buddha nature is empty, I have none." Dao Xin thought to himself that the boy was a vessel of the Dharma, and later he transmitted the Dharma and the robe to him. And this is the verse, first with Eiken Roshi and then with Francis Cook. The moon is bright. The water is pure, the autumn sky is clear. Is there a single cloud to stain this vast clarity? And then Cook, moon bright, water pure, the autumn sky clear. How can a speck of cloud mark this immense purity? So let me read you the rest of the story before we continue on. After Dao Xin acknowledged the boy in silence, he sent his attendant to the boy's mother and asked if she would release the boy to his care, eventually to be ordained as a monastic. The boy's mother, realizing the unique karma of her son, released him into the fourth ancestor's care. After Heng Rin studied with Dao Xin for some time, he was given the robe and the bowl of Bodhidharma in a transmission ceremony. And at that ceremony, a transmission gatha was read, which went like this. Flower seeds have their latent natures, and on the ground they bring forth flowers. When the great cause is planted in the field of faith, life is no other than no life. So flower seeds have their latent natures, and on the ground they bring forth flowers. When the great cause is planted in the field of faith, life then is no other than no life. So we know very little of Hongren's life and teaching, separate from his relationship with his two Dharma heirs, Huineng and Shen Shui. He was the teacher nearing the end of his life who asked his students to write a gatha of understanding, and from those gathas, he would choose his next successor to teach at Pao Tao Monastery. This story is told in the Platform Sutra and in Case 23 of the Gateless Barrier, but I'd like to tell you some of what isn't in those two sources. After Hongren read the two gathas, he knew immediately which one was better, and he inquired into its authorship. On hearing that the layman Huineng wrote the gatha, he publicly dismissed it, and he sent Huineng back to work in the rice hauling shed. And tomorrow I'll tell you of the exchange that happens in that shed. After acknowledging Huineng as his successor, he said, "All the Buddhas have come into the world for the sake of the great matter, and they have led people according to their capacity, small or great. Thus the doctrines of the 10 stages, the 3 vehicles, the abrupt and gradual teachings, and so on, came into existence. The supreme, delicate, secret, completely clear, true and right Dharma eye treasury was transmitted to Mahakashyapa, the senior disciple of the Buddha. In the 28th transmission from teacher to disciple, it reached Bodhidharma, who brought the teaching to this land. Then the patriarch Hui Ko inherited the Dharma and the robe, and they have come to me. Now I shall pass to you the Dharma treasure and the inherited robe. Cherish them and don't let them pass out of existence. Guard and protect them with your blood, because many have spilled theirs for you to have this robe and this bowl." Then he says, "Listen, listen. Sentient beings come to sow seed, and with the ground as a cause, fruit grows again. Without sentience, there would be no seed, and without nature, there would be no growth." So let me read you again the gatha that was given at his transmission ceremony with Dao Shen, and then we'll pick up today's Dharma dialogue. "Flower seeds have their latent natures, Shing, and on the ground they bring forth flowers. When the great cause is planted in the field of faith, life is no other than no life." So this is not a view necessarily of only cause and effect. It reaches below that view. It doesn't negate or oppose it, but creates its own doubling by presenting the possibility or the fact of only cause, cause, cause. Remember, life is its own time. Death is its own time. We do not think that winter becomes spring. We do not say that spring becomes summer. Each thing that you say and do, especially here at Sesshin, is the entirety of your life. This moment is not the culmination of your life to this point, but in each moment you're being born, in each moment living, and in each moment dying. In each moment, a unique and exact step when we do kinhin. In each moment, mu, anew. Until this point, you have not succeeded or failed in practice. You have not been a good or a bad student, dull or sharp. None of these exists, and none of that matters. There is only my voice. There's only the sound of dripping rain, the smell of incense, and the seeing of bright altar flowers. Nothing else is necessary. And so we sit. We sit with open hands and open hearts, allowing to arise what will and to fall away what shall, even though truly there is neither arising nor falling. Another way to say this may be, we all have our own unique tendencies and propensities. We do have our own specific and unrepeatable pasts, presents, and futures. We each have our own names, Mary, Thomas, Joel, Emily, Beaver, Muskrat, Mole, Weasel, Tree, Bush, Grass, Weed, Rock, Stone, Mountain, River. But below that, without voiding it in any way, we have the same exact family name. Some would say that name is Buddha nature, or essence, or emptiness, but all those make nothing at all into something. In fact, the family name has no name at all, but do not let that become something to hold on to. Buddha nature is an idea only. Emptiness, tathagata, only ideas. Please do not get caught there. Let the groundless ground, let not knowing be what holds and supports you, even though those two are only ideas. So Dao Shin asked the young boy, "What is your surname?" And Hongren said, "I have a surname, but it is not an ordinary one." Dao Shin said, "What name is that?" And the young boy said, "It is Buddha nature." And Dao Shin said, "Then don't you have a surname?" And he replied, "I have not, because the nature is empty." So I found the dialogue in this koan to be rather young and somewhat undeveloped. In it, we do not fully touch the richness and unexplained insights that we know Zen to be. This dialogue makes subtle Dharma points, but it is still rather explanatory. I suppose we need keep in mind that Hongren is yet a boy and his maturing has only begun. As I read this koan, I immediately remembered case 68 from the Blue Cliff Record, a koan, a dialogue that is a little more developed and a little more mature. Yang Shan asked San Sheng, "What is your name?" San Sheng said, "Hui Ji." Yang Shan said, "Hui Ji, that's me, that's my name." San Sheng said, "My name then is Hui Ran." And Yang Shan roared with laughter. Tenke commented on this case saying, "There is nothing about Buddhism in it. It is the realm of after enlightenment being the same as before enlightenment, a completely inviolable state. This is the eye of Zen." Hakuin Zenji said, commenting on this same case, "They took turns occupying the fundamental and extending their hands, obliterating both guest and host, so that there was no trace of relativism in the relative and no trace of absolutism in the absolute. relative and absolute interchanging, letting go and gathering in, both total. This is how it should be in Zen schools. This type of playfulness allows us to both stand up solidly in our own bodies, with our feet situated on the ground firmly, but also it allows us to move easily, deliberately, and swiftly as the circumstances change. I can hold and release, push and pull, speak and be silent. This is the extraordinary coincidence of opposites, where things, where you and I interact without interaction. We interact without interacting. Yang Shan and San Sheng move so easily because all have the same last name. That last name is not inherited from anyone or anything. And as I said earlier, that last name is called in myriad ways, but none of those callings are accurate. They are simple pointings at best. This last name never changes, but it cannot be said to stay the same. It moves, but it is not different in you than it is in me. It moves, but it is not different in you than it is in a tree, in a mountain, or in a planet. It is never hidden, although we often don't see it, and it disregards past, present, and future. It disregards space and depth, and it disregards within or without. Although this is wildly metaphoric, this we all have the same last name is why monks and nuns shave their heads and wear black robes in our tradition. Those are showings of the nondescript, mysterious darkness that we all are. And we, sitting in this room, pick up the echo of the black robes with our rakasus. Black, the unknowing and marvelous mind of nirvana. Black, the mind of non-differentiation. But also the black of moist, deep, and dark, rich soil that can shelter, feed, and give birth to seeds of varied and wondrous nature. And lest we misunderstand the black of the rakasu, we tie it together with a circle of wood, a roundness that is empty, the empty mystery of the night sky before the stars and moon have taken their place. And yet, that circle, that roundness, contains and includes each thing. Black connotes the reality of being before, before male and female, before names, before socioeconomic distinctions. It exhibits even before, before thought and feeling, before emotion and sensation. It presents before, before eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. And so Kazon writes, this nature or surname is not separated into me and you. It merely bears the faces of self and other. And then we discriminate. We hear Yang Shan and San Sheng and expect a particular response when one asks, what is your name? Similarly, when Dao Xin asked the young Hong Grin his last name, we expect the boy to say Choi. So often, before we even realize it, we discriminate. We tell stories. And on the one hand, this is what allows our species to be so remarkable. It is okay that we discriminate and that we differentiate, that we distinguish. But we too, at the very same time, need know that we all have the same last name, the same name, whether Jew, Native, Muslim, or Hindu, whether male or female, whether animate or inanimate, and whether born or yet to be born. Kazan continued on saying, by not being able to clarify the mind, we ignorantly become fascinated with what we see in front of us and divide it into this body and that body. Consequently, we become attached to things. We all come from a specific bloodline, the line of our mother and the line of our father. We also have a spiritual bloodline for many of us in this room through Eiken Roshi and Yamada Roshi, and for others through Thich Nhat Hanh. These bloodlines, our heritage, are important, and we owe a debt to those who made us possible. What good karma we have, in part because of them, to be in this body, here, now. But we also come from a bloodline that has nothing to do with lineage and continuation. It has nothing to do with white, brown, yellow, red, or black. It has nothing to do with masculine or feminine, hetero or homo, young or old. And it constantly shines from our eyes, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Although those lifetimes have nothing at all to do with reincarnation. And this thing cannot be avoided, and each thing is not different than it. It is with you when you are born, and it is with you when you die. Birth and death do not change it. There is only this single reality. There isn't ever something or somewhere else. This is why an old one was able to say, all sentient beings, and I would add insentient beings too, have eternally been immersed in the samadhi of ultimate reality. All of us, each one swims in the ocean of Dharma, sometimes on the surface, sometimes deep down, but still all the same water. All of us swim in the ocean of Dharma, sometimes with no waves, and at other times with tsunami-sized waves. But nevertheless, it is always water, it is always wet, and it is our true home, no matter its name or ours. At the end of the Teisho, Kazan then inquired, how can I comment appropriately? And he followed with, moon bright, water pure, the autumn sky clear. How can a single cloud stain this vast clarity? So though we all have different first names, we feel, think, we sense and perceive, there is, however, nothing that can mark, stain, or blemish the boundlessness of the heart-mind, which has no walls, Just as a bird's flight across the blue sky does not leave traces, neither really can we. For that is the true configuration of the vast autumn sky, boundless, with no walls, constantly and eternally blue. Okay, thank you.